What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for a special Tuesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and make sure you're checking up on all of our newest fantasy baseball content at Ethos Fantasy BB. Lots of great stuff over there, podcasts, articles coming at you every single day, so make sure you're giving us a follow. If you're not on social media, sportsethos.com is the place to find all of that. But we have our first guest of the regular season. We had some guests in the preseason, but I mean, now we are really getting into things, and there's a lot to talk about. So somebody very special is joining us. You know him on Twitter, at Razball, Mr. Gray Albright, who happens to also be the number one fantasy baseball ranker of 2023, according to Fantasy Pros. Gray, it's great to get you on the show. How you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. That's right. Number one with a bullet, right? Wow. I'm still waiting for my trophy. And the you know, Fantasy Pros for football rankings, I think they give trophies out to like the top five. For baseball, I get a tweet. That's it. Nothing else. Hey Joe, I heard you're in Toronto, right?
Yep.
I am. What's the deal with the Blue Jays, the wall they put behind home plate? What's that all about?
Well, they clearly spent money on the important things this offseason, cup holders and walls behind home plate. No players of note other than Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. But that's I don't really understand all the hype around it. I think it's okay. I think it's nice, but I was fine with it before. I would have much rather seen them sink money into an Ohtani or whoever, as opposed to what they did on the field. But I don't know. What was your view of it as just somebody watching? Did you like what you saw?
Well, I was happy I wasn't behind it, because then my view would have been obstructed. So I'm glad I saw it from the front side and not from the back. You know what I'm saying? I think the wall is, I personally think the wall is kind of obnoxious. Like what? So like, what is that like in case, like in a blowout, you know, not saying the Jays would ever be blown out, God forbid. I know they won't blow out opponents because their offense is really looking pretty bad for the last 2 years. But what happens during a blowout, if that were to ever happen and you're like walking down, you can't walk to like behind home plate? Like it's like they're trying to keep people out. It's, I don't know, man. I don't know who told them to build the wall, but it's not very welcoming.
I saw your tweet. It's not very Canadian. It's I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the whole thing in general. I think they always hype up this kind of thing. I don't know. Will they make more money off of it? Maybe. I don't know. As a fan, I'm kind of disinterested in even going to the ballpark this year based on what the product is on the field so far.
You're waiting for Alek Manoah to come back, huh? Yeah, I hear you on that.
Just think of where we were 2 years ago with Manoah as a Cy Young finalist, Guerrero, nearly 50 homers, would have won an MVP in most seasons if it wasn't for Ohtani. And now they both look brutal, but we'll talk about some of these things.
I think in retrospect, the Vlad thing, like until we see something else, I have to assume it had a lot to do with the minor league parks that they were playing in and not really Vlad, unfortunately. Like, I like Vlad, but he seems way more like a line drive hitter than a home run hitter now that we've seen him, like, for 2 years outside of the minor league parks.
Yeah, I think a lot of what you're saying is right. The production in those minor league parks was outrageous. It had like a 1400 OPS or something ridiculous in those parks. It's not something that he has ever done in big league stadiums. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the projections look like next year, assuming that, let's say, he hits 26 homers again, bats 265, 270, pretty pedestrian from what we're expecting. Are those projections still going to be kind of lofty? Because this year the projections were amazing on him from a lot of different projections, but they're still factoring in that 2021 season. So I'm pretty interested to see what they're going to look like, assuming that, you know, it's kind of a lackluster year from him this year.
Yeah. You know, we do projections at Razball, and I will say that we use Steamer. We use Steamer's projections, and we do our own playing time because Steamer doesn't have playing time. Anyway, what I think with the projections for Vlad, is he hits the ball really well. He just doesn't elevate it for home runs, I think. So it's like they have, you know, inherent, like it's an inherent thing where it's like you look at his numbers and you're like, well, his peripherals look like he should be better, but it doesn't really translate necessarily to fantasy, unfortunately. Like he's not like, you know, like whereas like, say, I don't know, Estuary Ruiz just got sent down, but or say someone say someone like Victor Scott II, like he's not necessarily a great hitter, but he's great for fantasy because he has speed, and that's how Ruiz was. Like it's like sometimes guys are good, but not necessarily good for fantasy. And I feel like that might be Vlad's biggest flaw. Like, I think he's a good hitter. I just don't know if he's so good for fantasy. Anyway, I don't even know why we're talking about Vlad.
I think he could be fine for fantasy, like, but he's just going to be overdrafted because of the name value, and people are always going to be thinking he can hit that 2021 season again. So if he was being drafted around pick like 100 or something, it'd be fine. But people are always going to be shooting for the moon with him because they're going to think that one of these years he's going to do it again. And maybe he will. But every game that goes on where I have to watch him swinging at these pitches looking like he's Ray Charles at the plate, it's going to be hard to invest in him in the top 3-4 rounds again. Gray, how are your teams looking so far this year? Have you been kind of decimated with injuries the way a lot of us have, or have you been dodging the landmines?
Well, so far, so good. Knock on wood. I haven't had any. Like, I don't believe, like I say during the preseason, and maybe why my rankings were number one last year, like I say not to draft top starters. Like I never draft top starters. I had Spencer Strider at like, you know, around 20 overall in my rankings, and he was going, you know, top 10 easy, usually top 5, and top 2 even in some leagues. So I was totally out on Spencer Strider. You know, with Framber Valdez, I feel like with him and Bieber, there was a disconnect between what actually was going on this preseason with their draft prices and what actually happened last year. Like Framber, for instance, he was terrible in the second half last year. His fastball velocity was way down. He was clearly injured for a while. And Bieber actually was out for 60 days with an elbow injury last year. So, I mean, I don't want to say I knew for sure that they were injured, but I mean, the signs were there. So for the people who are saying like, oh, wow, I can't believe, you know, Bieber got hurt. It's like, yeah, I mean, he was hurt last year. He was out for 2 months with an elbow injury last year. And Framber was not good for the final 3 months of the season last year. And that's including the postseason. Like Framber was really not good last year, yet he was getting drafted really high, and so was Bieber. Bieber not as high as the other two, obviously. Pivetta is a blow. I mean, you know, that stinks. You don't want to see anyone get injured, right? I mean, that it does suck. I've managed to avoid the injuries. So what's the excuse for why my teams are not good? that's another whole show. I have some good teams. Like I'm in a labor league with a bunch of quote unquote experts. I'm in second or third in that league. I'm in first in my TGFBI league. I think, it's either me or Dalton Del Don from Yahoo that are in first or second. We've been like swapping back and forth with first and second. Then there's other leagues where I'm not doing as well. Like I'm not going to sit here and say I'm good in every league. There's a few leagues where I'm struggling a little bit, but it's also, I mean, it's super early. Like there's no reason why people should be discouraged by like early team performance when you're only, you know, roughly 12 days into the season. Like it's so early. It's like you haven't even got you're like barely 90, you know, you're like 97% of the season still to go. Like there's so much time. You have barely even scratched the surface of the season. So like, you know, I would try and be more or less, you know, I try and like, you know, hunker down, and the things I thought 2 weeks ago, I would try and continue to think those things unless, you know, injury changes the landscape on certain players. But if a guy is healthy and he's just struggling in the first, you know, 2 weeks, I mean, just, you know, try and be patient and don't do anything too dramatic with your team is what I'd probably try and preach at this point, because it is really early.
Yeah, I have a Gladiator team. I'm not sure if you dabbled in any of the Gladiators, but one of my teams is batting 191. It's my only Acuna team. My only Acuna team, and I have him, Lindor, and Guerrero was my start. 191. I thought the batting average was pretty secure with those three guys, but that's just to illustrate how early it is. You can't really read too much into anything after 10 days. There are things you can read into, different velocity changes and, like you said, injuries, but for those established players, a lot of them, it's like, even just looking through like the, Yahoo, their app and their website, you can see who gets traded. And a lot of the players getting traded today are like Vladimir Guerrero and Francisco Lindor, and people are selling low. It's probably a lot too early, way too early to be doing that at this point. But you mentioned some of these injuries. We've also had Josiah Gray go down today. I'm not sure if you saw that one. It's just, It's becoming really ridiculous. If it wasn't so financially devastating, it would kind of almost be funny if it wasn't for all of this, for all these injuries. But I'm interested to know your take on how we go forward with pitching, how we stream them, how we draft them, even next year. Like, I myself right now saying I'm not going to be drafting any SPs in the first round, but if we have Corbin Burnes throw 200 innings and he's the only real ace left, then why wouldn't we take him in the first round? Because, you know, so I'm kind of still working through my thought process, but I'm interested to hear what you have to think about how we should approach starting pitchers in general with all these injuries.
Okay. So, you know, like I said, I don't draft starters early in any year, not just this year, any year. I don't do it because starters are super unpredictable, first of all. So the fact that Burnes throws 200 innings this year, well, congrats to the people who have Burnes this year, but that is no indication of what he's going to be able to do next year. And if anything, I would say if a guy can throw 200 innings this year, it doesn't make him more likely to throw 200 next year. It makes him less likely because he has 200 more innings on his arm. So I don't really buy into like, well, this guy did well last year, so why wouldn't he be good next year? Not for pitching. For other positions, yes. So, like, you know, what I say a lot on Razzball is, like, if you look at just a pitcher stats alone, let's assume 5x5 league, you have ERA and WHIP. So ERA is almost entirely out of a pitcher's control. WHIP is a little bit less so, but still, it's really out of the pitcher's control. Wins are completely out of a pitcher's control. If a team doesn't score any runs, then they're not going to get any wins. So you really have a pitcher, you're looking at their strikeouts. Now you can look at their strikeouts versus their walks. And there's other things, like, obviously you start drilling down on like whether or not a pitcher is actually good when you look at velocity and spin rate and all these other things on why a pitcher's good. Like, you can look at why a pitcher is good versus not good, but to look at a pitcher who's even good, like, just assume a guy is good. You look at him and he's still only in control of his strikeouts. And then very little bit like WHIP. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's barely in control of, like, you know, out of five categories, barely in control of two. Now, if you look at a hitter, you have a guy who can hit for power and speed. He's automatically better. Like, he's a lock for those two categories. It's not like Acuna can't hit for power and can't hit for speed, depending on his team. Like, his team has nothing to do with whether he hits for power and speed. Now, whether or not a team will let a guy run, well, that's a different story. But if a guy is fast, he's fast. And that's, you know, and that just goes, like, if a hitter is coming up and he's a lock for two categories, he's already safer. Like, the hitter is already safer than the pitcher. And then you go down and you look at his other categories, and it's like, well, if the team is good, you assume the runs and RBIs are going to be good. And if he's hitting in the middle of the lineup, so now you're looking at a guy. So even if, you know, you can't completely, you know, throw away how much other teammates have to do with runs and RBIs. But if a guy is sitting in the middle of a good team, in the middle of a good lineup on a good team, you would assume good runs and RBIs. And that's as much as an assumption as the whip for a pitcher. So now you're looking at a guy, a hitter has basically four categories where you can sort of drill down and say what they should be able to do. Whereas with a pitcher, you have at best two categories. And with a hitter, the only really fluky thing is average. And I would say even that has a lot to do with a guy's like profile. If he's a line drive hitter versus a fly ball hitter, if he's a ground ball hitter, if he's fast enough for a high BABIP, like you can kind of figure out average a little bit to a certain extent. But so you're looking at hitters have five categories, and at the best, a starter has maybe two, and a starter will never get saves. So you're never going to have that fifth category. So already, like, hitters are so much more valuable than pitchers. So when you're looking at like whether or not Burns throws 200 innings this year, like, okay, if he goes out and he wins the Cy Young for the Orioles, he wins 25 games, he has a Cy Young year, and then he's in the, and then he's a free agent going into next year. Okay, well, where is he going to sign? And then you're looking at a guy who's just thrown 200 innings. So is that a lot of stress on his elbow and his shoulder? I mean, I feel like you look at Burns, and even if he were to have the best case scenario year this year, you look at him next year, and I'm going to still be out. It doesn't even matter. I'm going to be out on Burns. I'll be out on anyone who pitches well this year and ends up in like the top, you know, 30 to 40 overall. I'm not saying I don't draft starters at all. I'll say, like, my first starter off the board was, like, Freddie Peralta, George Kirby, who's, you know, I mean, you know, hit or miss on these guys. Like, they haven't been totally great. George Kirby got rocked in his last start. So I'm not saying, like, I have a magic pill here, but I'm also not paying as much. Like, I'm getting, you know, Freddie Peralta or George Kirby 2-3 rounds later than these other pitchers that we're talking about. Like, you know, before, people were drafting before March and they were taking Garrett Cole in the top 12 overall. I had Garrett Cole around like 30 overall originally. Like, I had him nowhere near the top 12 overall. And people up until like Garrett Cole's injury, people were taking Strider and Cole in the top 12, like nothing. And Garrett Cole was another one where his velocity was down last year. His Ks were down. It was like people were drafting Garrett Cole like he was totally and good for another 200 innings. And, you know, I mean, it sounds like a prickish thing to say now in hindsight because, you know, I'm saying in hindsight now. I was saying it before, but now at this point, it sounds like, oh, yeah, like you knew Garrett Cole was going to be injured. It's like, yeah, I mean, It wasn't shocking. I didn't know for a fact he'd be injured, but it's not shocking that any pitcher who throws, you know, 200 innings and has, you know, throws, you know, 95 miles per hour, their arm's in danger at every moment. It just is. It just, unfortunately, that's just the way it is. So even if Corbin Burns were to do well this year, I'd still be like, I don't know. I wouldn't be drafting him in the top 15 next year. He'll probably go in the top 10, to be honest. It wouldn't be on my team, though.
I just have no idea what the market is going to look like because I don't even know, first of all, who's even going to be available at this point. It's looking like Burns, Wheeler, Kirby, maybe, like, and then a huge drop off based on a lot of these injuries. But again, it's still really early. We don't know who's going to ascend and descend down the rankings this year. But I have no idea how to approach the position going forward. There's no real way, I don't think, to predict it. There was no sign with Pivetta or Josiah Gray that I saw. So I think I am going to be more along the lines of maybe not a full fade for SP, but waiting until the fourth, fifth, sixth round a lot of the time. I have a few Strider shares. I wasn't really that concerned about Strider. Cole, I have no shares. I wasn't that interested, but this is something that's very, very hard to predict. Tyler Glasnow and Jacob deGrom, in a cruel, sick joke, might end up being the only two healthy starters left at the end of the year, just to show us what we know. So I really have no idea how to approach starting pitching at this point. We have no idea who's even going to be left, but it's been absolutely terrible. I think we can both agree that the daily news cycle has been just awful, waking up every day and there's two, three more guys going under the knife. Let's talk about some breakouts and some guys who are maybe not performing up to scratch so far. Talk about if we think these are some things that we expect to hold or things that we expect to regress. Let's start with probably one of my favorite pitchers to watch this year, Garrett Crochet. He's been incredible. That Braves start was just incredible to watch what he was able to do, just inducing soft contact, mixing his pitches really, really well. Locating, like, everything was just, he looked like an ace. He looked like an absolute ace against probably arguably the best lineup in baseball. What are your thoughts on Garrett Crochet? Is this something that you think is going to turn into him becoming an ace, or is this just maybe a lucky few weeks that he's had here?
Yeah, no, I think Crochet is like, every year pitchers come out of nowhere and, become aces. This is something that goes on every year. It wouldn't be surprising to see Crochet continue, on the path that he's on. I like him a lot. Unfortunately, the White Sox aren't going to provide any wins, really. I wouldn't be surprised to see a season from him of, 7 wins, 12 losses, a 3.25 ERA, a low whip, maybe a 1.10 whip. And then good strikeouts. Unfortunately, he's not gonna be able to throw that many innings. So, maybe 130 innings, with a 10 plus K per nine. So roughly 155 Ks, in that range, but that's good. I mean, that's a totally, totally passable. That's a fine starter for any league. Like, I would take him even in the shallowest of leagues. I've liked what I've seen from him. I think he's, really, he seems to be really coming into his own. I mean, there could be some ups and downs for him because, he's never thrown more than, 54 innings in the major leagues. If he goes out and he, hits a stumbling block at his 70th inning or something, if he goes out and hits a stumbling block around the 60, 70, 80 innings on his arm and, has a bad month or two, that wouldn't shock me either. He's so unknown at this point, but so far I like what I see. I think he's, absolutely rosterable in just about any league. He looks good. I mean, definitely.
Do you think it's better to just try and sell high on him in a trading league now, or would you ride it out?
I don't know. It depends on what, trades are always so weird because it's like, it depends on what you can get. Like, if you're trading and you can buy low on, say, Bednar, for instance, who had a bad outing today for the Pirates. So if you can trade, if you need saves and you can buy low on Bednar, that's not a bad type. That's not a bad trade. Or like, if you can maybe, if you needed, if you needed power and you can get an Ozuna type Ozuna's come out of the gate hot. So you may not be able to get him, but if you can get maybe you buy low on Arenado, who I think has issues. Like I'm not exactly saying Arenado is going to be great, but if you can buy low on certain players or, if you need a different, if you need something else, sure. I could see selling them, but I'm not desperate to sell Crochet. I think he can be good. I think he's probably, in the 3 to 4 fantasy starter range, like maybe a fantasy 3 or 4. And he started off basically on waivers in a lot of shallower leagues where most people play in a 10-team mixed league. I would guess he wasn't even drafted. And if he was drafted, it was a deeper league and it was later, after 250 overall, I think was his ADP. So yeah, I mean, it's pure profit at this point. So if you need something else, I could see trading him, but I don't feel like it's a dire thing. You have to trade him away.
I completely agree, especially with the landscape right now where he's maybe the best starting pitcher on your team, given, maybe you had a Strider, Yuri Perez, Shane Bieber, 1-2-3. That's definitely something that people out there have. Crochet might end up looking like one of your better starters at this point. But yeah, I wouldn't be rushing to sell him, but I do think to your point, there is a lot of value in these early season trades. Somebody in my DMs earlier today told me they traded Ronald Blanco and they got back Nick Castellanos and Max Meyer for him. So there is opportunity to be
Yeah, like Castellanos is a good buy low if you can get him. I think people are already, like, people on Razzball in the comments are already asking me, like, you know, do I think Castellanos is cooked? And I'm like, no one's cooked after like 12 games. Like, yeah, he could be. I mean, it's possible, yeah, but there's no way of telling that yet. I mean, he hasn't done anything. There's like so little time has been, so few games have been played. So yeah, I could see Castellanos feels like a good buy low. I could see that.
There will be players inevitably who, you know, these slow starts will turn into a bust season, but there is no way of knowing who that's going to be at this point. Last year through April, yeah, Blake Snell was awful. Like, people were like, maybe not dropping him, but honestly, maybe in like 10 team leagues, they were, he was mm-hmm. really bad. And then he won the side. Like, you know, it's just
yeah.
the way that it works.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, who's a slow starter every year, Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at his April, he was awful last April. And he was like in the talk for like MVP at the end of the year with like, it was like Otani. And like, you know, there was like, he was in that, you know, elite group of like people talking about for MVP. And he was awful in April.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the way it works. We're going to get into a couple of those guys that we're concerned about, and there's a pitcher in particular that really starts slow in April. But let's keep going on the positive side here for now. Let's talk about Reed Detmers. He looked like an absolute ace against the Red Sox. His first two starts have been just phenomenal. He's striking out batters at a 45% rate. Obviously, that's not sustainable, but is Reed Detmers turning into the ace that we maybe thought he could have a year or two ago?
You know, I don't really trust Reed Detmers. I don't. I have, you know, I looked at his game log from last year, and there was a start last year where he threw 5 2/3 and he had 12 Ks. So he had a slightly better start last year than he did his last start where he threw, 6 innings and 12 Ks. So he had a slightly better start last year, and he still had a mediocre year. I like Reed Detmers in, like, theory, and I think I've even written, like, sleeper posts for him in the past, like, you know, maybe a year or two ago. I like Reed Detmers, and I think the stuff is really good. But he has had he's been such a struggle bus from like one start to the next. Like, we're sitting here talking about him after a great start. I would not be shocked by next week. People are like, oh, Reed Detmers, it's terrible. there's no pattern you can really surmise from his starts. You're like, maybe he is breaking out finally, because, you know, for a long time, people thought he was capable of much better. So it's possible, but man, I do not trust him at all. I think there's little to look at right now and be like, oh yeah, he's fixed and better, and he's going to be good for the rest of the year. Maybe, but I don't buy it. I'm not even a little bit yet. I'd have to see probably a full month of Reed Detmers before I was like, okay, yeah, he looks better.
Yeah, he's somebody that I've been starting him in 15 teamers. In 12s, I think that he's kind of borderline there, especially this week against the Red Sox at Fenway. I think that you could probably sit him pretty comfortably there. I know he just dominated them, but a much tougher environment. I think that, you know, I am buying in a little bit, but I think I'm more on your side of he has to prove it to me a lot more than just two starts, which have looked really good, but I need to see probably 5 or 6 until I'm really buying into Reed Detmers. But I do think at this point he probably warrants a speculative pickup if you're still seeing him out there, especially with all these injuries. You likely need a replacement anyway. Let's talk Shota Imanaga. He has been really, really good through his first couple starts. Granted, the first one was against the Rockies, and you know, you can only read so much into that, but he looked really good against the Dodgers the other day as well. Great. Is this a legit type of breakout here from Imanaga? He looked really good in spring in terms of strikeouts and walks. I think it was 25 Ks to 2 walks in spring. He's somebody that I think we all kind of undervalued in the community, but what are your thoughts on Imanaga?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I'm surprised too, because I was totally in on Kode Senga last year going into the preseason. Like, I felt like Senga was underrated and I was drafting him everywhere. I'm an Aga. I was not as confident in, and I'm not, after watching, because I've watched him now, both of his starts, and after watching him, I'm not 100% sure why I wasn't as confident in him. I'm not, honestly, I'm not sure. Maybe it was like, because in, you know, in his numbers over in, overseas, his command wasn't as good as Senga. It wasn't even as good as Yu Darvish, who struggled, you know, when he first came over with his command. So maybe it was the command that was really worrying me with Shota. I don't know exactly, but he looks really good. Like the first start against the Rockies, what I've noticed was, you know, the Rockies are so bad that they were swinging at a lot of pitches out of the zone. So the fact that he didn't walk anyone there, I sort of was like, eh. But then he threw the four innings against the Dodgers, a very patient team, a good hitting team, and he looked really good against the Dodgers. So I'm bought in, you know, as far as that goes. Like I hope like we don't see the command, you know, hopefully we don't have him lose his command and he suddenly goes back to what I at least thought he was coming over, which was like I assumed he was going to be like a 3+ walk per nine, a 1.25 to 1.3 whip guy with like, you know, maybe a 3.7 ERA, 3.7 plus possibly. But now he looks as good as Kode Senga right now. You know, it's like I'd be surprised if he's like, you know, worse than, you know, a number three. Like I honestly thought he was probably a number five fantasy starter. And now he looks like a three at worst, with potential to be a number two, depending on how many innings he can go. Like, he looks great. I'm really surprised at how good he looks versus, you know, the preseason, where, you know, unfortunately for him especially, it's like you have to rely on scouting reports and what other people are saying to a certain extent, because I watch maybe highlights of him, but I didn't really see ever, you know, I you can't really see everything. And even if you could see a full game, even if you were to like stream a full game of his, you'd still be watching it against, you know, people in, you know, in Japan, and not people, you know, not major leaguers. So it's like, so you would have to take that into consideration. So, he looks good though. I'm impressed. Like, he looks really good.
Yeah, I'm bought in. I think that I wrote up the other day, I think that you can kind of buy high on him a little bit, even though it was a couple of great outings. I still think people haven't really come around to how good he is. I think he's at least as good as Senga, at least as good. I'm close to it anyway. And Senga came first year, had a 3 ERA. I think you're going to see maybe not as many strikeouts with Imanaga, but then again, like the strikeouts that we've seen so far are really, really excellent. Like I said, 25 of them in just 12 and two thirds in the spring. He's carried that over so far. So I'm very interested in him. I know he's not somebody that you're going to find on waiver wires anywhere, but I would be buying him where you can at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like that call a lot. I think buying high on him is something I would be looking at too. I agree.
Let's talk Jordan Hicks. Not somebody I'd be buying high on personally. This one worries me. This one really worries me. We're talking about a guy who has never thrown more than 77 innings, and that was way back in 2018. As a starter, it hasn't really worked out for him in the past. I know that it was only 8 games he started in 2022, but the command for me is not there to be a starter, especially when you're looking at the volume that you're probably going to get out of him. I'm just not that interested in Jordan Hicks. He's a sell for me, a big sell. What about you, Gray?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I don't know how much you can really sell him for. That would be like my one thing with him, because it's like you can sell him, but if you're selling him for like, you know, I don't know, say Colton Cowser, who looks good, but he only plays like once every 3 games or something. Like, it depends on who you're selling him for. Like, if you're selling him for someone who is just like a waiver wire guy as it is, and it's like, well, just ride out what you can get from Jordan Hicks and see where it goes, because, you know, maybe he gives you a good month, 6 weeks, maybe. I agree though. I feel like he's barely a number. He, in my mind right now, he's like a number six fantasy starter. And that's kind of like barely holding on to a number six. Like he is, like he looks like his peripherals look okay for the time being, but he feels like a guy who we could look at again in like a week and be like, yeah, he's not very good.
Yeah.
as a starter, that is, at least, you know?
Yeah. I think he could be a very viable bullpen arm, which he has been in the past, but he's just not somebody, especially once they get Cobb back and Robbie Ray comes back and they'll, you know, people will have to inevitably leave the rotation. I feel like he'll be one of those guys. Let's talk Bryce Terang. Bryce Terang so far is like a producing like a first round fantasy player. He's hit a home run. He's stolen seven bases. He's hitting .379. Is this just small sample size fodder, or is there something here with Bryce Terang, you think?
Well, I think Terang, you know, I like Terang a lot because like speed plays, even if it's a, you know, even if it's a guy who doesn't necessarily have like a huge upside for his other tools, like he has legitimately 40 steal speed. So if he's able to get on base and he has good plate discipline, not a bad strikeout rate, and, you know, solid enough walks too. So if he can get on base and he can steal 45 bags and he chucks in like, I don't know, maybe five homers on the season, like 5, 45, 255, there's value in that. I don't necessarily love it for, you know, like I don't think he's – what he's doing right now is way above what he's capable of. You know, I don't think he's going to – continue to hit like anywhere close to 380 or anything. Like he is definitely hitting above his weight, but he's good enough where I think in long term I think he's probably gonna be a guy who you're happy to have as like, you know, your MI in even like a 12 team mixed league. He could be an MI all season with you know, just for the steals alone. Like if he's, you know, maybe let's say seven homers, 35 steals, 260. I mean, is that really that bad at MI? No, it's not that bad. I mean, it's like, you know, it's fine. It's, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily going to win you leagues, but you're not going to find much better on waivers, even in a 12 team mixed league. Like that's a decent line. So yeah, I like him. You know, there might be, if he gets platooned a little bit, you know, if he gets platooned out against lefties, then, you know, in a daily league, you can replace that. In a weekly league, that's going to hurt his runs and RBIs, which is, you know, in turn going to hurt his value. So he's not a top 50 overall player. He's probably like a 150 to 175 at best overall. And he's a solid, like maybe a top 15 MI, maybe, like, you know, it's like he's good enough for now though. And, you know, if he starts to falter and another guy appears in a shallower league, then I could see moving on. But for now, I think there could be value there.
I'd like to see him move up the lineup if possible. I'm not sure how likely that is, but he has pretty good on base skills with the speed, maybe over time. But yeah, he's somebody that I think he's like 70% rostered on Yahoo. So he's still like, if you're just in the average league, you're still maybe able to find him out there. Second base, shortstop eligible player. I think that he does warrant an ad where you can still find him. He's not going to always be this hot, but somebody that is, you know, performing very well at this point. Somebody who's been the number two overall fantasy player up to this point, right? Just behind Mookie Betts is Spencer Steer. He has been just unconscious. He's hit three home runs. He's stolen a couple bases, 14 driven in. He scored 9 runs himself, batting .378. The thing that's crazy about Spencer Steer, if you do play on Yahoo, he's eligible at first, second, third, and in the outfield. He's been just incredibly valuable. I think it's probably somewhere where you can kick the tires and see what the market's giving you in your league if you can sell a little bit high, as much as I do like him. What do you think, Ray? I know this. We both agree probably this isn't sustainable, but do you think that you might be able to get something for Steer at this point that's worth moving on?
You know, Steer was one of those guys where I felt like the market was undervaluing him in the preseason, because last year he played 156 games, went 23-15, 271. Like, he's already good. I don't think this is like, you know, hopefully Spencer Steer's breaking out. Like, he had a really solid year last year. Maybe not necessarily, like, you know, maybe a not a top 50 overall year, or not even, like, you know, top 75, but a very, like, a valuable year where I would not be shocked to see a repeat. And a repeat of that is, you know, that's top 100. That's good. It's not like, that is not a terrible year. And if he's able to be better than that year last year, then, you know, you're looking at a guy who's probably better than Castellanos, a guy we mentioned earlier. And Castellanos was going, you know, way before Steer in drafts. And I think people in people's minds, you know, I think they think probably Castellanos over Steer, but I wouldn't be shocked if Steer's better. I like Steer a lot. I don't know, like, you know, sustainable is like, you know, saying sustainable is like, well, what does that mean? Because he's still, like, he's not going to hit nearly 400, but he is going to hit for some power. It's a good park. It's a good lineup. He has 15 steal speed. If he goes 25, 15, 270, I'm taking that all day. So I'm kind of in the, like, maybe buy high even. Like, I like Spencer Steer a lot. I see no issues with, like, playing time. Like, I always felt like his playing time secure. Like I mentioned already, he played in 156 games last year. David Bell plays him every day. I mean, 156 games, that's a lot of games. And he sent him out there every day, basically, last year. So I don't see why, you know, even if players get healthy in Cincinnati, I don't see why Steer would leave the lineup. So I like him. I would be trading for him, if anything.
I agree with you there. I agree with you. The only thing is that he might be just so expensive right now, considering, like, where he's ranked, and people, like, tend to overlook at rankings. He might just be really expensive. But yeah, I agree that he's not somebody that you have to be getting rid of or anything like that, because, like, he just had a great season last year. The injuries are something, like, even if guys get healthy, it's not to say that other guys won't just get injured, just the nature of the game. And they are pretty banged up. And even when they were pretty healthy last year, you know, he was on the field pretty much every game. And that eligibility is ridiculous. Just first, second, third, and outfield. It's not that nice in every league. I think NFBC, it's like first, third, and outfield. But pretty damn nice, however you look at it. Let's talk about some slow starters. Let's transition back to the sad news. Let's start with Luis Castillo. It's been absolutely dreadful. Three piss poor starts from him. My Blue Jays actually were able to get to him yesterday, despite the fact that they are completely inept, which should be maybe a little bit of a concern. But again, it's only 15 and two thirds. But what is your concern level right now with Luis Castillo?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not personally, I would be buying low on Luis. I'm not really worried at all. I'll be honest with you, though. I have not watched one single start of his. So I am only going by the stats. I haven't seen, like, how badly he's missing or, like, what's going on. But his numbers, like, his peripherals look totally fine. He looks like he's been really unlucky at worst. Like, his BABIT is 451. It's, like, crazy. Like, that's crazy. A 451 BABIT is, like, that is such a small sample size number that it's just, like, really ludicrous. Like, that basically is, like, a hitter hits a slow grounder to second base. A squirrel jumps on the field, grabs the ball, and throws it into the stands, and the hitter gets a ground rule double. Like, it's just, like, it's ridiculous. A 451 BABIT is ridiculous. There's no way any pitcher is going to have a 451 BABIT, let alone him. His left on base looks low. Again, I'm just going off of the stats, and I haven't watched him, so I don't know necessarily, like, you know, how bad he's actually looked. I see his velocity is down. But it's April, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing if velocity's, you know, if he eases into velocity versus coming out of the gate and hurting himself. So, yeah, I don't know. I think he's probably fine. I mean, his Ks look fine. His walks look fine. I don't know. I mean, have you watched him? Are you worried?
I watched the Jays start. I didn't see the other ones. I saw highlights and, you know, looking through Savant and all that. I watched the Jays outing. It wasn't great. He was... he wasn't missing badly, but he wasn't, I don't know. He didn't look sharp. He didn't look like Luis Castillo that we know. And maybe it is just April, the slow ramp up process. He doesn't want to overdo it or whatever. I'm not overly concerned though. I think that he's, you know, at this point probably should still be considered one of the safer starting pitchers, especially among the elite class. I don't have any real reason to think you should be trying to dump him or anything like that. I think he's fine. The velocity is a bit of a worry, but there's a lot of different reasons for low velocity this time of year. Kevin Gausman scared the shit out of me the other day in New York because he threw a fastball that was 85 miles an hour, but it's very cold. He was, you know, slowly ramping up, and that's something that you're going to see this year. Tariq Skubal, he had a pitch he threw that was like 91 at the end of his outing the other day after sitting 97. So I think it's just the nature of the time of year generally more than anything. I don't know that that accounts for Castillo necessarily, especially not in that Toronto start, but I'm not overly concerned really about Luis Castillo. I alluded to him earlier, not by name, but I mentioned a starting pitcher who always is just terrible Aprils, and that's Max Fried. Now, he kind of got screwed in that first game against the Phillies. I don't know if you saw that call that he got on the Castellanos pitch where he threw a fastball pretty much down the middle. That was called a ball. It didn't bode well for him in that one. He didn't make it out of the first. And then didn't look terribly sharp against the Diamondbacks. 7 earned runs on 10 hits the other day. He's a notoriously slow starter, but should we be worried about Max Fried in any way?
Yeah, I mean, Max Fried was a guy who I was out on in the preseason. I like last year, he was not great. He was out for a while with an arm injury. I don't know. I'm not these guys' doctor. I'm not a doctor for anyone. I have no medical degree. So I don't know whether or not Max Fried is, you know, has an issue with his arm or not. But I mean, if, you know, the past informs present, I mean, he did have an arm problem last year and it, you know, it knocked him out for quite a few months. So I wouldn't be holding on like for dear life and expecting him to come around. I did not draft Max Fried anywhere. I would not have because of last year. I have a strict don't draft pitchers if they have an arm injury last year policy, and Max Fried did. So I'm worried about Max Fried personally, but in a way where I don't actually have him on any team. So it's a lot easier for me to say, like, you know, I would be really concerned if I had him, but I don't. So I would be looking to see if maybe someone believed in the bounce back potentially, because, like, you know, his velocity is down 2 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. He looks bad. I saw the start that you're talking about with the Phillies, and I'll, you know, like I said on Razzball about that start is like, yes, it was a bad call by the ump, but he was in that position because of all the other bad stuff he did. Yeah. Like it wasn't like he threw one bad pitch, the ump missed the call, and so then he went back and he threw another strike and got the next guy and struck out the side or something. Like, he loaded the bases. He was like, he looked terrible in that Philly start. And it wasn't just that one pitch that the ump missed. The ump missed a pitch, which stunk for Max Fried because it would have helped him, but he couldn't really help himself in a lot of ways in that start. So yeah, I'm not in on Max Fried, unfortunately, man. I don't have anything positive to say about him. I hope he's okay. I have no shares though.
I have a couple. I have him in my home league, which is a head-to-head league, and then I think I took him in one draft champions that I did. I'm not overly concerned, but at the same time, I'm really torn. I go back and forth on him. So I did a show with Eno a couple months ago with Eno Saris, and we were talking about Max Fried, and he was rhyming off statistics about the recurrence of forearm injuries once there has been an initial injury, and it's like 70%+ of those guys end up with another injury. So it shouldn't surprise us if something does happen with Max Fried. But then there's also a lot of smart people who are very, very, very interested in him. I know our mutual friend Vlad Sadler was really interested in Max Fried. And, you know, it hasn't turned out so far. He's not somebody that you can be dropping. And I see, even just looking at Yahoo's player rostered rate, he went from 99 to 98%, which I know sounds like nothing. But the fact that people are already cutting Max Fried, I think, is a little premature. especially considering like how many starting pitchers are even left at this point, to be cutting one who at this point is healthy still. I wouldn't be doing that. I am a little bit worried, but I am at this point going to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's not somebody to be buying. Like, I totally agree there. He's not somebody to be buying low on. I think that the fact that there is a history of arm injuries as recently as last year should kind of scare you. There was a few things that made him miss time last year. There was blisters. I think it was a shoulder. It was the forearm. There was a lot of stuff going on with him last year. So I'm a little bit worried, but not like panicked. I'm not in panic mode yet. I'm probably at about like a 5 out of 10 on the worry scale. Mitch Keller had a bit of a better start yesterday, but generally speaking, hasn't looked terribly sharp out of the gate. The strikeouts haven't really been there so far like we saw last year. He did have 9 yesterday against Detroit, but only 8 in his first 2 outings against kind of a couple of poor teams in the Nationals and the Marlins. Overall, through 17 innings, we're looking at a 5.29 ERA, a 1.59 WHIP. Gray, any interest in Mitch Keller? Yeah. I know I was somebody who wasn't terribly interested, but I do have a couple of shares, just later strikeouts that you could get in drafts. But it's looked pretty piss poor thus far.
Yeah, it hasn't been great. So I have a few shares of Mitch Keller, and I watched his starts, and yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of good stuff coming out of those. I wasn't super enthused watching his starts. I might have thrown a few things against the wall. Yeah, I mean, he looks kind of like he is warming into the season. I mean, the best case scenario is he's like working his way up and still ramping up from the spring, because like, I mean, his walks are just atrocious. Like, he doesn't seem like he has any idea where the ball's going. His velocity is down. There's not a lot of good takeaways from Mitch Keller's starts. I'm trying to stay optimistic, but honestly, at the end of the day, like, even a great Mitch Keller, like, let's say last year is his platonic ideal, it's still not that great of us. I mean, he's still a 4.2 ERA guy with a, you know, under 10 K per nine. I mean, I think there might, you know, maybe there was a little bit of optimistic thinking going into the season by me for thinking he was going to be better. At this point, I would just take what he did last year, which was like, you know, a barely number 4 to 5, like probably like a 4, because 194 innings is nice, but, and the K's aren't bad, but the ERA, the ratios aren't good. So yeah, I mean, hopefully we get like a number 4 to 5 fantasy starter. At this point, I'm hoping he's as good as he was last year, and he doesn't take a huge step back. But right now, his command looks so bad that I'm hoping he just needs to tweak something and he's okay.
Yeah, I'll take a number 4 starter, not somebody that I'd be buying. I have a couple shares and that's going to be it. Let's move on and talk about some of these disappointing position players. Nolan Jones, I think, is somebody that's been a shock to a lot of people. I'm not trying to victory lap anything, because you're gonna end up looking foolish if you do it at this time of year, but so far I've been right on Nolan Jones. He's looked pretty terrible. Came to Coors and had that one nice game in the first game against Tampa, but overall we're looking at a 190 batting average, no homers, one steal through his first 42 at bats. What are your thoughts on Nolan Jones here? I wasn't interested before, I'm not interested now. What do you think, Gray?
Yeah, I think he might end up being one of my bigger L's, because I was really into Nolan Jones this year. I liked him coming in. And now, like, it's funny because, like, we're only, you know, 11 games in, and he's barely played in Coors. So, I mean, there's still optimism here. Like, I'm not, like, completely, like, down on him, but I do see, like, it's funny that even after 11 games, I do see, like, the flaws in his game have become really apparent real fast. Like, he's really, like, he's a bad strikeout rate guy, and the strikeout rate is ballooned so badly that his average has really plummeted. And even with a 333 BABIP, he's still hitting 190. It's like, I mean, Coors can only help so much, man. It's not gonna be able to fix your entire game, you know? Yeah. So yeah, man. I was one of those glasses half full guys with Nolan Jones that I saw, because, like, you know, taking another random guy popped into my head. So, like, Chris Bryant, when he Rockies, obviously, but I'm talking about when he was on the Cubs and he first came up and he was like the rookie of the year and he hit really well, but he still had like a high strikeout rate that first year with Chicago, and then he brought it down, and Rizzo actually did the same thing, and then they brought their strikeout rates down. And so I was like under the impression that Nolan Jones would actually get better at strikeouts, and somehow he's gotten worse. It's not good. It's not good. He's going the wrong way. So yeah, I mean, Coors hopefully can help a little bit to like cushion the damage that he's going to do if he continues with like a 38% strikeout rate. But yeah, I'm concerned about Nolan Jones a lot, man. At this point, he looks like a platoon guy, and you only start him in Coors, which is not what you drafted. Like, that is not what you wanted in like the top 35 overall, wherever he was going in drafts.
He was expensive. That was my main gripe. It wasn't really so much. I mean, the Coors thing is a problem because there's half the games where you don't want to start him. And you can still start him in Cincinnati and a couple places, but by and large, you're getting like 100 startable games to begin with, not to mention platoon risk. I think he overshot his stolen base output last year and kind of changed our expectations a little bit too much. So I'm kind of not surprised, but at the same time, I didn't think it'd be this bad either. Are you just trying to sell him at this point and get what you can, considering the draft price was so high, or would you just ride it out if you do have him?
Oh, man. So I think, you know, I honestly, it hurts me to say this, but I think I would sell them low. If I could get the good thing about selling low is like the other person thinks they're getting a deal, but if the player continues to be terrible, they're not getting a deal. Yeah. Right. So if you're like, so if you look at Nolan Jones and you're like, well, Shota is at the draft price, Shota was going like around 200 overall and Nolan Jones was going around 40 overall, you know, roughly. And if you were to take Nolan Jones and trade him for Shota, you'd be buying high and selling low. But at the end of the day, would it be that terrible of a trade? I mean, honestly, you might be working. It might be working out well for you to trade Nolan Jones for like a Shota, like that kind of thing. And that's only 11 days into the season. If you were to like think about saying that like on draft day, like, oh, I think I'm going to draft Shota instead of Nolan Jones, people would be like, are you crazy, bro? Yeah. Have you lost your mind? But that's where we're at, I think.
Yeah, I think most people would happily take Shota. Maybe I'll do a poll later on today, but I feel like people would take Shota pretty happily at this point, a lot of them. A lot of disappointing hitters. And there's another guy who was being drafted right in the same kind of range, Nico Horner. He's been dreadful so far. 156, he has no homers, no ribbies, no stolen bases. Is he a buy low for you? Is he what are you thinking right now about Nico Horner? Because I'm not terribly interested in acquiring him. I think I've maybe one share, maybe, but just not somebody that I'm terribly interested in considering that profile.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so like I was saying earlier with, Bryce Tarang, if Bryce Tarang, I said like projections, seven homers, 40 steals, 260. Like if you think about that, that's really not that different than Nico Horner, right? I mean, that's like, you know, it's not terribly different. If Tarang platoons, his runs and RBIs in theory will be lower. And if Nico hits leadoff, you know, obviously he's going to have a lot more runs. So, I mean, Nico should be more valuable at the end of the day because of runs and RBIs. Just because of not being platooned. So he should be more valuable. But, yeah, I mean, I like Nico Horner. I think right now he is a buy low for me. Like, like I said earlier, it depends on what you're trading for him. But I think he is a buy low because his walks look, like, great. His strikeouts look fine. He looks like he's been really unlucky. And also, he looks like a small sample size. Like, if we were in, you know, August, and he had 10 random games where he was hitting 156, you wouldn't even think anything of it. Like, it'd be like, oh yeah, so he's had a bad week and a half, who cares? But it's because it's coming at the beginning of the season that it's more pronounced. So I think Nico Hoerner's a buy low. How much you're buying him low for, that's more of the concern, I think.
Yeah. One more player I want to ask you about. He's definitely somebody that I'm interested in buying, but I see a lot of people are already giving up on him. Vinny Pasquantino has fallen all the way down to 70% on Yahoo. He was well above 90 to start the season. It's been terrible. No doubt it's been terrible. He is 4 for his first 33. He has not hit a homer, has not driven in a run. It's bad, but at the same time, the strikeouts are good, the walks are good. I think it's just a bad, you know, 10-game, 9-game stretch at this point. What are your thoughts here on Vinny Pasquantino? Is he a buy, or are you genuinely concerned right now?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably one of the most difficult guys. Like, I'll be honest, I think with Pasquantino, it's basically a roll of the dice whether you're buying him or selling him. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be able to tell you, like, for sure what's going to happen, because he's returning from injury, so it's unclear how good he's going to be this year. And that's always why I think that was baked into the draft price too. Like, no one really knows what they're going to get from Pasquantino. Could he be good? Yeah, absolutely. He could be good. I think he's still capable. His strikeouts look fine. His walks look fine. Look, you know, everything you want to see looks fine for him. It's just like, you know, no power has been there so far, but he had a shoulder issue. So if he came on slow with the power, it wouldn't be shocking. So at the end of the day, he's got no speed whatsoever. So at the end of the day, if you have like a guy who's like a first baseman and he's giving you, say, 17 homers, you know, zero steals and a 270 average, it's real. It's kind of like, you know, it's not, it's really kind of boring. So, I mean, I like him.
That's fair.
You know, like, I like him for a corner man in a deeper league. I think a buy low for like the corner man in a deeper league is okay. But in a shallower league, I don't necessarily disagree with the people who are moving on in, like, you know, those shallow Yahoo leagues. And if you're doing it, I mean, I could see being nervous. I could also see, like, in a week or two, people picking him up off of waivers and, you know, getting, you know, a decent player. Like, that could happen. Like I said, I think he's like one of the biggest rolls of the dice at this point. So I like him, but I don't have a ton of faith in it.
Oh, I think that's a very fair assessment when you put it that way. 17 homers, maybe he gets the 20 with batting average, but, you know, not a great lineup around him. So the counting stats are going to be kind of limited. You're not looking at a guy who's going to go 100 and 100. It's probably like 70 and 70, maybe something like that. So maybe in those shallower leagues, you can kind of start to think about moving on. But again, it's just still such a small sample size for so many of these players. We're talking about 10 games. We could be looking, you know, look at Matt Chapman last season. Look what we would have done for Matt Chapman after April. I can say that as a Blue Jay fan. And then he was just dog shit the rest of the way. So you never know.
I was about to say, I was like, wait, wasn't he good last season?
He was good in April. He was good in April. It was right. Kind of like the reverse.
And then just, yeah. No, I follow now what you're saying, because I was thinking for a second, I was like, wait, he was like Vinny, but he wasn't really, was he? He was bad for the most of the season, just not April.
April, he was fantastic, and the rest of it was an absolute mess, kind of the reverse of this. But just to say that the small sample size, you never really know what it's going to look like at the end of the season. But Gray, I really appreciate you coming on, man. It's been a lot of fun getting to meet you here for the first time and shooting the shit with you.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thanks for having me.
I want to give you a chance to just tell anybody who might not be familiar with Razzball or with you what you guys got going on.
Yeah, so over at Razzball, we have daily and weekly tools for fantasy players, where, like, we have the Streaminator, which helps you with pitching streamers, especially now with all the pitching injuries. It's really helpful to look at, like, you know, it's all laid out. So every streamer you can imagine, we have them all, like, by dollar value, so you can see how valuable or invaluable or unvaluable a player is. And then we also have that for hitters with our Hittertron. We have all the hitter streamers as well. So pitchers and hitters, if you're streaming them or if you're looking to pick them up, we have we have a fantasy baseball trade analyzer. We got all kinds of stuff over Razzball. So yeah, come check it out.
Razzball is a great site, and I say it pretty regularly on the show that if you're just looking at your own site, ESPN or Yahoo or whatever, and looking at their rankings, it's probably not as as accurate as what you're going to see in the Razzball Player Rater. You can set it up to your specific league settings, and it does give you a more accurate view than just, you know, opening up Yahoo and seeing what the rankings are. So definitely recommend going over there and going and following Gray over on Twitter at Razzball. He's definitely one of the funnier people you can follow on Twitter. Talking about baseball and all kinds of other stuff. You can follow me over on Twitter at JoeElRico99. And make sure you guys are checking out sportsethos.com. That's where you get all of our fantasy baseball content right from the source. But guys, we'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, take care. Have a great night.